Hello, Blenders, and welcome to episode number 124 of Real Blend, a podcast that is still disappointed Jake used the pun, the Zoom where it happens. That's you're better than that, Jake. You're better.
One, that is still marginally better than the average pun that makes it onto this show.
Is it, though?
It is, because only about four puns have ever been on this show. The rest are very bad wordplay.
I approve of the pun.
Does that make you feel better, Jake, or worse?
I'm still riding the high from Come With Me If You Want to Love.
That is a really good one. My name is Sean O'Connell, the managing director here at Cinema Blend. The other boys that you hear on the show, as always, Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Hi, Jakey.
Bye, Brian. How good to get to see you. I love your shirt.
Oh, thank you very much. Yet another Snyder Cut shirt that I'm wearing. And I have
Michelle is such a lucky woman.
Well, I want to introduce Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Hi, Kev. How are you?
Also with a cool shirt.
So, Sean, how are you, sir?
I got a print last night for Man of Steel, and it's hanging up in the living room, in the family room. And it's, to me, a commemoration of completing the Snyder Cut book. It was a gift to myself. But I also convinced, this is the difference between my home situation and your guys' home situations. You guys are allowed to hang stuff from your movie
oh,
life.
Oh, no, I'm not. There are discussions when things get, when things are put up in my home.
Could you have a lot of celebrity stuff around your house and Hollywood stuff?
I definitely do not get final say on what things are put where.
Okay.
It's not, but you know what? Lauren actually knows much better than I do about placement. So yeah. I just kind of, but I feel you on the marriage thing in the sense of it's kind of Lauren's decision.
See, you guys have a lifetime of bliss and happiness.
Yeah.
I get to choose what stuff goes on my wall.
Yes.
Right.
Really, tomato.
Honestly, tomato, tomato. So, Michelle says, "Cool, hang a Superman print in the living room. It's got a what is that? What is it? Art Deco, an Art Deco style, which I really like to it." And PJ comes home.
Like
PJ's got a job
poster
now, and it came yesterday, right? So I framed it and I hung it up. What'd you ask, Jakey? I'm sorry.
It looks like the Rocketeer poster.
It looks like the Rocketeer poster. Yes, it's a riff of the Rocketeer poster. And PJ comes home from work yesterday, and he says, he looks right at it and he goes, "So this is what we're doing now? Superhero stuff in the living room." And then, even better, my mom comes over today to come visit Brendan. And he says, Mama, they call him Mama. Mama, come in here. We got to look at this new poster that dad got to put up. Billy's new poster that mom let dad put up. So she comes in and she says, you're taking over the house now. And I said, no, I'm taking over this little sliver of wall that's in between two windows that I'm allowed to hang a poster. So that's where I'm at.
Let me tell you, I bought Lauren a painting in Central Park once thinking it was going to be the greatest gift ever.
I was there.
Yeah, you were with me. That's right.
Yeah.
And it was on the kitchen wall for maybe a week and then it was gone.
Oh,
like that.
Man.
And I'm telling you. But now, I mean,
wait,
it gets
where
moved.
Is it? I liked that.
I honestly don't know where she put it.
Burned. The ashes are buried in the backyard.
I will say this. I was able to, since I've been broadcasting from here since like March 16th, I have a Alfred Hitchcock Birds poster in front of me. I did get approval to remove that and put Defy Bloods signed by Spike Lee.
Oh, nice.
There. So because I thought it would be a good commemorative thing about being down here for as long as we have and what kind of interviews and broadcasting stuff we've been doing. So that one was approved.
I have no idea how we got down this rabbit hole. How did we even get here?
I think it's cool.
I do too. I just forgot. I forget. I'm supposed to do show notes.
You were telling a story about Man of Steel poster and how you were able to put it up.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Okay. Anyway, episode highlights. We have a big show lined up for everybody. No guest this week, which means you get a lot of the three of us. We have a ton of trailers to react to, more delays from films going to movie theaters, and we are going to dive deep into Hamilton on Disney Plus. The embargo lifted today, and we're going to take it from three very distinct perspectives in that Kevin was able to see it on Broadway with the original cast. Jake saw it in Chicago, and Lin-Manuel Miranda was in the audience with him. And
right
I saw
it
right in front of you. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
And I saw it for the very first time just last night. So we're going to tell you all of our opinions to that. Plugs. A reminder, we have the community page over on Facebook. So head over there if you guys want to join up and interact with a bunch of other blenders. We are posting episodes on Cinema Blend's YouTube channel. So if you want to have a visual element to it and see the shirts that we're wearing or talk about the posters that we're hanging on our walls, you can tune in on YouTube and see it. And of course, we're available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you, Gabe. That's worded so nicely. It flows right out of the mouth. We also have a shop, a Real Blend store that you can access to buy merch from the show, including mugs and t-shirts and tote bags. Kevin bought a few mugs. And we're potentially going to add some more stuff to that in time. So if you want to buy some Real Blend merch and represent the show, we are at cinemablend.com/shop. Kevin, what'd you buy? Mugs, right?
I bought two mugs, and I got Lauren a shirt and myself a shirt, and I got a tote bag, which I'm super excited about. But I did the, for people who are going on the shop for the first time, if you don't see a certain color of something that you want, there are color options. Like, I was like really excited because like Gabe and Sean did a really good job with the descriptions about like, there's like a milkshake Pulp Fiction reference to one of the items as well. I think it's the shirt. And so the coffee mug, you can actually change the color. I wanted a blue and yellow, and you can get that. You can get our, like, the signature, like Real Blend, like blue, yellow.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, you can. So you can click it and switch it. I really want a blue mug. I also got a yellow mug too with blue writing. I switched it around.
That's what I want. So you can do both of those.
Most proud of the description for the tote bag, and it's a reference to Jake's shirt. I put, "You're gonna need a bigger tote."
That was good.
I was really happy about.
Whatever you like, I picture you typing that and then just being like.
I read that quote in Vertigo. Like, I was like in a Vertigo shot as I read it for some weird reason.
Nice. All right, let's get into a borderline depressing topic, the weekly poll. And this year we got tired of asking about all the delays and just simply asked you straight up, is Christopher Nolan's Tenet going to open in theaters this year? In theaters this year. Kevin, I will defer to you. The only choices were yes with an exclamation point, no with an ellipses. And which one do you think prevailed?
What date was the poll posted?
Oh, that's a great question. Last Friday, which was the 26th.
Okay. On June 26th, would Tenet have opened in the rest of the year, right? Through the rest of the year.
The rest of the year. Correct. Yes.
No.
Well, yes, one with optimism, but 59%. 59% to 40%. And I thought you would have said yes because June 26th still seemed pretty optimistic. But now that AMC has talked about the fact that they are not going to open until the 30th and everything's pushed back into August, I'm going to go on record because it's actually one of our first talking points. I'm starting to feel like movie theaters are not going to open.
No,
I'm starting to feel like they're not going to open like this year. I don't think it's
Broadway doesn't help.
Oh, yeah. So tell everybody what happened with that, Jakey.
Well, basically, they just announced that Broadway is not going to be opening up at all in 2020. At earliest, I think January 3rd is the date that I read. They basically said that most Broadway shows can't operate with a half full or half empty, depending on how you look at it, audience capacity.
Right.
So they cannot abide by the social distancing rules that movie theaters are working to initiate into it.
Interesting.
So for them, it's just not worth it. So they're basically going to have to wait for this to be over before they're going to, because they can't do social distancing because it's just too expensive.
Do you think also because they can only do essentially one or two shows a day, whereas a movie theater can do five shows of a thing?
Maybe so, but also keep in mind a Broadway ticket is significantly more expensive than a movie theater ticket. So, sure. Like, you know, while that one seat, you know, for, you know, might only get rented out once a day, it might end up making the same money that a movie theater seat does over the course of five or six showings.
Yeah.
And I had a pretty, I mean, I probably already told this last week, but I had a pretty mind-changing perspective when I went to Ocean City last weekend with Lauren and her family. And while there, I felt safe in the hotels and the restaurants, as I mentioned, but the thing that scared me the most was the boardwalk. When I was just passing hundreds of people that weren't wearing masks, that didn't seem to care or know there was a pandemic going on. And that was the moment I really went to myself. I was like, the reason we're not going to be able to probably get back to some type of normalcy is because people aren't following the guidelines. And I think it's the same. I kind of equate it to when you're driving a car. I always feel safe when I'm driving,
yeah.
But I don't feel safe about the other drivers, right? And so when that's kind of how I equated what happened to me on that boardwalk that night. I'm like, this is the reason why we're not going to be able to see some type of normalcy sometime soon. Because if people are just going to not obey that stuff, like I was in an elevator with a guy and he took his mask off and started talking to me. I'm like, these are the things that started to worry me because I don't know that I can trust enough people to be able to go into a theater and not play around with that stuff and not remove their mask. Yeah. And when I interviewed, I spoke to the Rooster Brothers for their pizza film school, and Joe and Anthony were even saying that they felt nervous about returning to theaters. I mean, these are two of the greatest and biggest filmmakers working today who obviously love the theatrical experience with Endgame and Infinity War, all their movies. And they seemed hesitant. And I'm like, I really need to put myself in check because there was a time period where they were holding on to that July 17th date for Tenet. And I don't know about you guys, but there was definitely a shift towards optimism for a while. I think we can all, if we go back on record in our show, you'll see that I think at one point we even said blanketly, is Tenet going to open? And we all said, I believe, yes, at some point.
Well, I want to point out, like, this is such a drastic shift for our show that all three of us comfortably are saying it doesn't feel like anything's going to open anytime soon.
And to Sean's point, it's important to note this, though. And the pandemic has been an interesting story because we all work in news, and pandemic took a backseat story-wise to everything that was happening in the news for the longest time. And pandemic was like in that top 10 trending topic for a long time. Mm-hmm. Other things happened in our country, rightfully so, that were meant to be talked about and in the news cycle and to get change. And the pandemic kind of became the backseat. Mm-hmm. So there was a kind of a, I don't know if we forgot about it, but we kind of just moved past it slightly. And there was a moment where like, oh, maybe we are going to somehow shift back in. And then once the news cycle shifted back to COVID-19, we started seeing these spikes. And I'm like, and then I see the boardwalk. And then I Joe and Anthony say what they say. And I'm like, I don't know that I can trust the other drivers on the road.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
That's the way I look at it. And like now I am more on the side of like, yeah, Broadway closing. I don't think we're going to get new movies this year.
And did you guys see that video that Cinemark tweeted out of someone kind of walking with like a spray canister spraying down all the seats?
Yeah.
Didn't part of you make you wonder like, why haven't you been doing that all along? Like, why did it take a worldwide pandemic for you to clean your seats?
Yeah, that's why, like, when Kevin's saying he doesn't trust the other drivers, you know, I don't necessarily trust the theaters. You know, like, the quality of the theaters before all of this was not great.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
And like, when I was staying at this hotel I was staying at, like, and that was interesting because they basically didn't allow housekeeping to come in the whole time I was there. So that actually felt safe. But then, here's the weird thing. You're talking about trusting theaters. When I got into my hotel room, as I mentioned, they had a remote that said, oh, your remote's been cleaned. No one's using it.
Okay,
the sticker's there. How do I know that's true?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, you know, there have been multiple stories done about movie theaters over the years and how dirty like a cup holder is in a movie theater or an armrest or under the seat.
Sure.
So I just,
I've seen those on airplanes, like the tray, you know, you can't really, you shouldn't take the tray down and touch it. Cause if you go over it, it's horrifying.
And okay, also the attitude about airplanes.
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead, Jake.
No, I was just going to say, to your point, the attitude about masks. You know, I was also on a vacation that the weekend Kevin was, and my girlfriend and I were genuinely the only people casually walking around with masks on, and we were given looks like we were freaks, like we were monsters, like we were the weirdos in the group, like we're like this mentality of,
that's
and
how
we
would, I felt.
You know, we'd overhear people say like, oh, I dare someone to say something to me about wearing a mask, and it's just like... Yeah, so of course we're swinging back the opposite direction. The fact that, like, two people who are genuinely trying to, like, take some small part in doing the right thing are being presented as the freaks and the weirdos, like, Absolutely. Like, that sort of attitude is making me have doubt about movie theaters.
That's the vibe that I got as well, that they're, like, it was, like, you know, remember when AMC released their statement about July 15th opening, and they didn't require the masks?
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of a red line there, or a line there, that it was basically, if the area you were in required a mask, you would still have to wear it. But yeah, basically, AMC changed their tone, because
they changed that real fast
overnight.
But interestingly enough, in AMC statement, and then we'll move on, is that they said it was a political element, right, not to wear a mask. And that's what I'm seeing in the news now. I don't know if you saw the video yesterday of there was a woman in a grocery store,
yeah,
who refused to, I think it was a Trader Joe's,
yeah,
and she refused to wear a mask, and she got screamed at by the employees. And I don't know the full story, so I don't want to give too much perspective.
The thing that struck me about that video was her claiming that her doctor said,
yeah,
that she has a breathing condition and she's not allowed to wear a mask, which my first thought was, if you have a breathing condition, your doctor would probably tell you not to go to a grocery store with, yeah, a bunch of people. He wouldn't say go to a grocery, right, store without him. That's the last thing a doctor would tell you.
Right.
But a lot of those arguments I'm seeing from people, and I think you would see this in movie theaters as well. Imagine that scenario in a movie theater. That would probably happen.
Oh, like, you'd be
next to John Smith,
yeah,
and he would take his mask, yeah, off, and you'd be like, sir, can, yeah, you please put your mask back on?
Yeah. And honestly, like, when I'm watching Tenet for the first time, I don't want to have to worry about that. When I'm watching Tenet, I want to enjoy it. I don't want to worry about when I see someone cough, or I don't want to, like, look over there and be like, that dude took his mask off. Oh, yeah, crap.
That's a great point.
You know, I just want to be like, I would rather wait. Honestly, don't freak out. I'd rather wait a year and watch Tenet, genuinely enjoy it without a distraction, than, yeah, watch it in a month and have, like, little things bug me the whole time.
And Jake, you and I not joked about this, but we said this when we did a little thing we did for Fox the other day, mm-hmm, about Fast and Furious 9. Universal seemed to know what
they
kind of
nailed
on.
It.
They just by nailed that it back movie a year
back.
They're now looking like the smart ones in the room.
I will never, yeah, the perfect image for this entire analogy is Amy Adams in the Arrival suit holding the board up,
yes,
and someone just wrote Tenant on it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just,
yeah,
there's so much uncertainty, and that's probably the only way I would feel safe. But now, that being said, there's all these dates, you know, they're all like new dates, and the new dates don't really mean much to me, because it's like, okay, so Tenet.
Every movie is the New Mutants now.
Yeah. It really those dates is. Mean nothing. It's just a 2-week barrier. That's
so
all
Tenet
it is.
So Tenet goes from July 30th to August 12th. Bill and Ted Face the Music also gets pushed back 2 weeks. Mulan now claims that they're going to be August 21st. The Michael B. Jordan Without Remorse is going all the way to 2021. But the question is always, like, how different are things going to be in 2 more weeks? Then we all of a sudden think that it's going to be okay.
It's just a placeholder.
They're Band-Aids. They're just Band-Aids placed on it in case things start to turn back around. But I'm
it's
with
like
you
a
guys
plane
in the
delay.
Fact that, yeah, it's exactly what it feels. And you know how frustrating plane delays are when,
yeah,
you're sitting there. And
yeah, 2 hours at a time.
Except there's never
when
a
you know
for those.
When you know the storm over you is going nowhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so blanketly, as we move on,
yeah,
no new movie, as we sit right here, right now, just as for a time stamp and a time capsule, if it's okay if we're wrong or right, any new movies open up this year?
I mean, I'm going to keep an optimistic
in
yes.
In theaters.
I'll keep
yeah,
an optimistic
I
yes.
I want to say yes, too. I want to say
but
yes,
I'm
too.
I'm saying it's going to be
when
November, December.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like November, December. It feels like everything would really have to not only take a curve back down to acceptable levels, but stay there for a little mm-hmm. bit. And right now, it's everything's yeah. going up, and that's
because we've proven that we can get the curve down. What we haven't proven is we can get the curve down and keep it there, because everyone gets so excited that they just take it as like, okay, cool, let's go.
Yeah,
yeah. The people Jake and I saw on our vacations, that gives me hesitation.
Separate vacations. We didn't go on vacation together.
Yeah,
I wasn't invited.
Yeah.
I wasn't invited.
But that gave me
oh,
hesitation.
I was just gonna say I'm really offended that I didn't get invited on this real
yeah,
blank
Gabe,
trip.
Yeah, Gabe said that we should have invited you, but I don't know.
All right, well let's
we did,
talk
we
about
did a, we did a meetup. We did a meetup.
Oh, yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, bring a cardboard me around with you. Let people pose with it. There's a developing production going on at Disney with the Pirates of the Caribbean film. Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, because there's two films that are in the mix. Again, there's such a glut of product that theoretically going to be coming, so we don't really know when all these new movies will get slotted in, but I'm intrigued by the idea of Margot Robbie and writer Christina Hodson, who collaborated on Birds of Prey, are going to be reteaming for a Pirates of the Caribbean film. I'm of the mindset that they need to get away from Johnny Depp, and I've heard there was another person I thought who was in the mix to take over, because there is another spinoff or reboot that Ted Elliott and then Craig Mazin are working on, and I thought they had a lead, but maybe not. Does that not that sounds familiar?
I do seem to remember there was a different Pirates of the Caribbean with someone else.
Right.
I can't think of who it was.
But I'm really intrigued by Margot Robbie getting a chance to potentially play that, because A, I think she's spectacular and gets pigeonholed a little bit, you know, as Harley Quinn, but we've seen her try so many other things, and I think this is so far out of what we've seen her attempt to do. In other
pigeonholes, she's a 2-time Oscar nominee.
For what? What was she Oscar nominated for?
For I, Tanya, and Bombshell.
That's right. Yeah. No, but I'm saying, like, if you asked Joe Public what Margot Robbie's best known for, like, I even forgot that she was in I, Tanya, and that was her Oscar nomination. I think they would automatically say Suicide Squad, don't you?
I don't mean this to be like a dissenting opinion, but if somebody asked me the first thing I think about Margot Robbie, I would actually think of Wolf of Wall Street.
Would you? Okay.
Yeah, because I just remember being so blown away by her with that film. But again, it's all about a personal element of what you remember. But mm-hmm. That was the first time I had seen her, and I'll never forget like hearing her accent in the film and then hearing her talk in real life. And I'm like, oh my God, like she's incredible.
Yeah,
and
she nailed
like,
that Jersey accent.
It's insane. And that movie, you know, her performance is amazing, but I do like this news. I think Margot Robbie does choose interesting projects. I mean, she's obviously in a place where she probably, you know, can choose the projects she wants to do. So it sounds like there's something there. I did see a tweet the other day that I thought was interesting about, like, because this is essentially like a reboot, right? It'll be a female led reboot of Pirates of the Caribbean. Is that what that would be?
I think, or just like another story in that world, but it doesn't have to connect to the existing five movies. Aren't there five or mm-hmm. four? There's at least five. There's five now. Good Lord in heaven. Okay.
I don't remember four of them. I think I remember one of them.
I will defend one, two, and I think Verbinski's original trilogy, I think all three of them are fantastic. Bloated, but I think genuinely, I think all three, I think Verbinski is one of the most underrated directors working today.
Great director. The Ring is amazing.
And it's a type of atmosphere that you could explore any component of it.
I think I'm done with that world though.
Are you really?
I think I've just checked out. And I love Margot Robbie, but my first thought was like, oh, like this is
how
just going
to
take
something
up your time.
Like new to work with.
Yeah,
that was the tweet that I saw. It's like I think Margot Robbie is such a powerful, and I can't take credit for it because someone else tweeted it. I can't remember who it was, but she's such a powerful actress. And I really think that she deserves to be in the best product. And I feel like being tied to a Pirates of the Caribbean, it then becomes, oh, this is a female led mm-hmm. Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and while that's amazing, and I think that's great, and I want more female voices in leading action films. But at the end of the day, I feel like she deserves more original material.
Right.
And I would love to see her play around with like, what, imagine her like a Nolan film, or like, imagine her like, you know, I feel like there are other things I'd want to see her do, but again, it could be awesome. So I don't know.
Jake, you retweeted somebody who tweeted the idea of the carrying on the League of Their Own, but carrying on with the African woman, who threw the baseball back to,
Gene Davis. I thought that was a brilliant, I love that. Scene. I love that movie. I love that movie. Was it Matthew Cherry, the guy that won the Oscar for Hair Love?
Yeah.
He tweeted the clip with it. And I want to say it was on the 100th anniversary of the Negro Leagues.
Oh, was it?
Which was earlier this week. It's one of those things that, you know, yeah, like, and granted, I don't get pitched movies, so I don't know what it's like to be in Hollywood, being in that position. But I would imagine that if I'm a Hollywood executive and he walks in the room and says this, like, says just that little tweet, I go, yeah, cool. Like, what do you need? How much? How much you need? That's a brilliant story. It's a great idea. You find a way. You know, I mean, I think it's cool to tie it to A League of Their Own, but you don't necessarily have to. I think it's a cool spinoff
to finish up the thought. So essentially, I would say the new movie would start on that scene, and then it would follow her as she went off to, because she became one of the first players to launch the Negro League, essentially.
Yeah.
And it would go on to tell their story. And you'd get a League of Their Own
unbelievable
spinoff or sequel kind of thing, but it'd be branched around new characters. So.
Now that sounds fantastic.
Right. Yeah, that I'm into.
I would see that. I feel like that would be a fantastic way. I love the idea of like parallel stories and like kind of what's going to happen. Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Who was that character? In any movie, like who was that character in that in that scene?
I was going to ask that. What's a side character that you would love to see kind of like paralleled into a different story?
I don't know. I don't know if this has like been how confirmed it's been. But Tom Holland did tell me that the little kid in Iron Man 2 that's watching Tony Stark, that Tony Stark gives something to at the racetrack, is Peter Parker. I think it's a lie too, because I don't understand
World's Fair. It was the Stark Expo, which would have been in Queens, which would have made it makes sense. But stop, just stop it.
Why? Why does that bother you?
Because it feels like it's overly forcing everything.
I think so too, but I feel like you're such a Spider-Man guy. I figured you would have jumped onto it.
It's fine. It's fine. I don't need everything to be connected to Tony. God, it's frustrating. It's frustrating that Tony is the new Uncle Ben, for God's sakes. That's true. Annoyed by that.
He is.
Anywho, you know what else I'm frustrated and annoyed by? They're kicking around the idea of doing a Twister reboot. With Joseph Kaczynski in development. Joseph Kaczynski is directing, as we were talking about before we started the show. He did Tron Legacy.
Which
was awesome.
He did Oblivion with Tom Cruise, which is also really good.
I also liked.
I like that. He's doing Top Gun. We haven't seen it yet, but so far it looks pretty good. And is circling the idea of doing a Twister reboot. So strangely enough...
Didn't we say everything we needed to say?
Oh, 100%.
With the original Twister.
And we revisited Twister recently, like within the past month. I took it off the shelf and watched it with the boys. And it's still fun, but it does not hold up in the least bit. Nor would it benefit from a polish. It was a bad idea. Like, the idea is cheesy. It's super cheesy. It's like chasing after storms. And Gabe has something to add.
I have a question. A hypothetical question that might change your guys' mind on this project. Good. With it being Joseph Kaczynski attached, what are the odds that this turns into Tom Cruise fighting a tornado?
Oh, see, now I'm in. And then they throw Tom.
Because Tom Cruise will actually go into a tornado.
Son of a bitch.
I'm in.
Here's the scenario. All right, you have the skydiving scene from the sixth one, Fallout. You send him and a camera operator into an actual tornado, and you literally photograph it.
There needs to be a heist
in this version, Tom Cruise is Dorothy.
Yes.
They send Tom Cruise in to get the data himself.
I would pay money to watch that.
Yeah, I would watch that.
And it's because it's Kaczynski, there's like a 40% chance that
with Daft Punk doing the score.
Because Cruise doesn't work with other directors. He tends to go back to people he's very familiar with and very comfortable with. Yeah. So it's just the idea of there's no Bill Paxton anymore. I get him and Pullman. Sorry. There's no Philip Seymour Hoffman, obviously.
Helen Hunt ain't coming back.
Helen Hunt's not coming back. Elliot from E.T.
Can I say for the record,
back.
I think that Philip Seymour Hoffman, my two favorite performances of his are actually Twister and Along Came Polly.
I know.
Those are my two favorite Hoffman
performances. That can't be true. That just means you have to see more Philip Seymour Hoffman films.
I've seen all of his movies. Everything from Schenectady, New York to everything you can
imagine. I like Schenectady, New York.
The Master. He's amazing in The Master.
I love The Master, but this goes back to my argument about drama and comedy. I think that he does comedy masterfully, but The Master is an amazing film. Don't get me wrong, but Hoffman had range. That's
all
I would say.
You might say it's like masterful.
It is masterful.
Okay, don't get to get on me for the Zoom where it happens masterful.
I'm not even trying to say it's a pun. It's just that I'm just being stupid. So anyway, we all vote thumbs down on the Twister reboot. Yeah. Unless Kaczynski lures Tom Cruise back to play Dorothy.
Unless Tom Cruise is in.
All right. Tentatively.
I'll give Kaczynski credit real quick. For people out there who like Tron Legacy, I rewatched it the other day. It's such a great movie.
Oh, did you?
Daft Punk soundtrack is amazing. But the reason I wanted to bring that up is because the version on Disney Plus does not preserve his actual IMAX aspect ratios. So if you get the Blu-ray, you can actually get the gigantic IMAX scenes in when they go into the game. So like it's actually full blown IMAX. It's awesome. If you have like a 4K player or a Blu-ray player at home and a big TV, put the Blu-ray on, not the Disney Plus version, because it just blows up. It's awesome.
Physical media.
I have never seen Tron Legacy. And everyone talks about how great it is. I've not been compelled to put it on.
Dude, let me tell you this right now.
It's
one of the sequels that doesn't need the first one to be watched.
Oh, cool.
Like, for me, like, I saw T2 before I saw T1. I saw Die Hard 3 before I saw Die Hard 1. I saw, you know, so it depends on your age. I know. But I was 11 when Die Hard 3 came out. Come on. But in regards to Tron, you don't need to watch Tron 1 again prior to Tron 2. Tron okay. Legacy works on
you
its
get
own.
The
it's
idea.
Actually, yeah.
I get it. They ride the cycles. They go around the game. I get it.
It's awesome, man.
All right, so a trailer for a movie that seems like it would be in the awards consideration race. Respect dropped recently. Jennifer Hudson playing Aretha Franklin. She's incredibly talented. Aretha Franklin's a fantastic singer. Looks like a musician biopic. I
mean, yeah, it's just... yeah. I mean, it looks like it sort of you know, fits sort of that mold that is the biopic. Okay. I will say that when I started hearing the singing.
Yeah,
I could not tell if it was Jennifer Hudson or Aretha, and I feel like that is a big compliment. I don't
Jennifer
think they
Hudson's
could have
incredible.
Picked a better voice. Yeah,
she's incredibly talented.
She's incredible. Yeah,
yeah. No one's going to deny that. So let me ask a question then: what helps a musician's biopic stand out from? Because I'm really tired of that genre, honestly, yeah. And it feels like we get at least one a year, and if not one or two, and we're just now cycling through the next era of artists who feel like. You know, now it's Elton John or Queen and Aretha Franklin. And you're going to get people who were big in the 60s and 70s. And we'll just keep going. Like 10 years from now, we're going to be getting Madonna biopics. And Debbie Gibson's going to have a biopic. Like just crap like that. You know, U2 is absolutely getting a movie. So brace yourself. Some kid
what about
in
Pitbull?
Pitbull will one day get a, well, Quibi. It's going to go to Quibi. If Quibi's still is. It'll be a really
it's gonna
quick.
It's going to be 6 minutes long.
Yeah, real quick highlight reel of Pitbull's music. So there's a 5-year-old in Dublin right now who is going to play Bono on screen someday. He doesn't know it yet, but he is being groomed to lead the U2 biopic. So what do you guys think sets them apart? Like what sets the good ones apart?
I mean, musically though, like are you talking about music or can it be like a straightforward biopic like Steve Jobs?
Honestly, anything. I'm thinking more musician biopics, but I guess any sort of biopic.
I mean, I feel like with the reason I bring up Steve Jobs, because I felt like that was a different style of biopic that kind of focused on three different time frames. And it wasn't like your standard, like growing up. And like, even though it did the years, I think when you play around with linear elements
that
in a
helps.
Biopic, you can because you have the standard elements of a biopic, the beginning, the adversity through the trying to get the famous and then the downfall. And I think, you know, I didn't love Rocket Man as much as you guys did, but I appreciated the what Dexter Fletcher was trying to do with it. I actually really liked Bohemian Rhapsody, even though I know that goes against kind of the trueness of Queen and Freddie Mercury. It's interesting. It's a great question because I feel like I'm definitely more interested in biopics that are musicians that I love and know.
Sure.
And Respect looks great. And I think Jennifer Hudson's brilliant, but you're right. I mean, it feels like the trailer makes it seem like it's going to fall into that standard puzzle piece biopic element.
Right.
And I think the thing that makes it stand apart is when you go a little more edgy. If you give it an R rating, Rocket Man had an R rating, which I thought gave it a little more edge. I also feel like if you play
Compton.
With... Yeah, Straight Outta Compton. Thank you for bringing that up. That is a brilliant, brilliant biopic. Mm-hmm. Or biopic. I thought that F. Gary Gray did such a brilliant job with that movie. I'm so happy you brought that up. That is one of my favorite biopics that I've seen. Or is it biopic or biopic? Now I'm getting screwed
up. I always
said
it was biopic.
I said biopic.
Too. Okay. All right.
So that's probably wrong.
It's probably wrong.
It's
more
than
likely
right.
wrong.
No, but
also
honestly,
tell me the story of an artist who I'm probably not familiar with their background. You know, like, I think I might know enough about Aretha Franklin, just a cursory glance at her. But I also felt the same way about Elton John. And I thought I learned a lot from Rocket.
Yeah,
Man,
but I think that the style of the filmmaking should reflect the artist. I mean, and the two that I would bring up would be Rocket Man, because I thought the style of Rocket Man very much reflected 100%. Who Elton John is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to bring up the Bob Dylan biopic, I'm Not There, where they
Heath
cast
Ledger.
Several different actors. I mean, the structure, that movie itself kind of sums up who Bob Dylan is and his music. Bob Dylan is by no means an A, B, C, D, E kind of biopic kind of guy.
Right, right.
And so they realized he's not that kind of guy, so we can't tell the story in that way. I think they felt the same way with Rocket Man.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to really let the artist itself be reflected not just in the music, because it's easy to get right to the music and then play it and have you be like, oh, yeah, I know that song. The movie itself, the structure, the filmmaking, the style need to be unique to the artist's story that you're telling.
Jake, one of the complaints you had about Bohemian was Queen's involvement. Yes. And I was wondering, I don't know if we discussed this already, but did that affect your problem or your issue with Rocketman at all in the sense of like Elton John being involved? Because it's the same thing, essentially. But Rocketman does a good job of showing the negativity, though. They do show the negativity.
Elton John has been, not only has Elton John been very open and honest about the issues that he's had in his life, he's used them to really help other people and help them overcome obstacles in their life. He's basically said, like, look, I went through A, B, C, and D. Let me explain to you how tough that is and maybe help you out as well. The issue with the remaining members of Queen is that I've always gotten the impression that they have a chip on their shoulder that without Freddie Mercury, that they're not like Queen anymore. And, you know, the story that Sacha Baron Cohen tells about famously how they wanted his version of the story to have Freddie Mercury's death be the halfway point and have the back half of the movie be how they kept going and were a success. You know, like, to me, that's very telling of who they are. And the fact that they allowed, and granted, we've discussed this 1,000 times, but the fact that they're so that they painted themselves or allowed themselves to be painted as choir boys in Bohemian Rhapsody when they got into just as much trouble, if not more so, than Freddie Mercury did. It just really rubbed me the wrong way. So maybe I expressed myself incorrectly in that I talked about, like, you know, a person's involvement, you know, a person shouldn't be involved. For me, it's if you're going to be involved, you at least got to be honest about who you are as a person. And I didn't. Yeah. I think that's, for me, the difference between Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocketman. I felt like Elton John was honest and the remaining members of Queen, Brian May and everybody, were not. Roger Taylor were not.
It's a great point. And accessibility, and Gabe, I know you'll check in, but accessibility is interesting, right? So you mentioned the Bob Dylan film. No one saw that, right? Because it was kind of off the wall. Like it wasn't a film that broader audiences were going to take in. Yeah. And it's interesting. So then you start wondering, okay, does the biopic formula have to play a certain way to reach a larger audience? Like Walk the Line, I thought was a great biopic. I really enjoyed Walk the Line. I thought that film was phenomenal. I think, was that Taylor Hackford, who's a really great director?
And no, was it was
that
Mangold.
No, it was Mangold. It was Mangold. That's right, I forgot. Wait, what did Taylor Hackford do? Why am I thinking of Taylor Hackford?
Proof of Life. That? Proof of Life with Russell Crowe and Meg Ryan.
I don't know where I came up with that. But yeah, Mangold did.
Helen Mirren, isn't he? I think he's married to Helen Mirren. Or was.
I know where my brain went, and I'm only going to explain this because I made a brain fart. When I interviewed Helen Mirren for Hitchcock, which was a biopic, we talked about Taylor Hackford, and I had biopic Hitchcock. That's how my brain went.
That's another great biopic element is when you focus on just a moment.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
I like biopics that do that.
So when we interviewed Springsteen, I'm going to really name drop here just for one second.
Hold on, because he is dropping a big name.
When we went to New Jersey and interviewed Bruce Springsteen at his home, Mike Ryan asked him, this was in the midst of Rocket Man happening and also Bruce's songs being used for Blinded by the Light. And he said, you know, right now that Elton John's in, being played by someone else in a movie, do you envision a point in life where someone's going to play you, a younger actor's going to play a younger version of you? And he said, essentially gave the, I never really gave it much thought, and I'm sure somebody's going to try to do it one day. But he said, James Mangold has been pestering me to do a movie that is very focused on a period in Bruce's life in between his run in the 70s, which would have included Born to Run and The River and all these things. And then he had a huge falling out with his producer manager. And he was essentially in a spot where pop culture was real, pop music was really taking off. MTV was taking off and bands like Madonna and all of the new wave bands were taken off. And Bruce was looking around thinking like, I might not have a place here anymore, you know, and was in a really low spot. And he had to reinvent himself and come up with a new way to present his music. And he came up with Born in the USA. And so this movie would focus on that period of just like Bruce coming off of being Born to Run Bruce and then going through, I don't know what's left to do or if I have a place here in music, and then coming up with the Born in the USA. And it would end essentially with the That's launch of the Born in the USA album.
That's also a good title for a movie, Born in the USA. I actually like that title.
That'd be amazing. That'd be fantastic.
Because it's also one of the most misunderstood songs in the history of music.
Sean,
I told you this story. I only seen Bruce Springsteen live one time. And it was like a major Valor concert took place on the Washington Monument.
Did you like see him backstage?
Oh, I met him afterwards because he was like, but the crazy part was I'd never seen him before live. And I think he only did like 4 or 5 songs. Like Metallica was there. Eminem was there. Rihanna. It was like insane. I was just like backstage interviewing. I remember I interviewed John Oliver randomly. He was there. I sneak away. And I'm like, I'm going to go watch Bruce Springsteen play. Yeah. And I've told this before, but like all I heard was boo. And I'm like, why are people booing Bruce Springsteen?
Kevin was like, he's good. Don't boo him. Like,
this guy's amazing. I thought it was a political thing because Born in the USA is a very political song.
Yeah, and he's very political also.
And I was wondering, is this a political thing? And I had no idea that people just say his name like that when he's so singing. Funny. I wonder if when Bruce Springsteen first started hearing that, I'd love to ask him if he thought it was booze.
He got sad.
Like, did he think it was booze the first time he heard it? I wonder.
Not until you just said that to me, no. Now I'm wondering. Gabe points out that Taylor Hackford directed Ray. Also, Kevin, your brain wasn't close.
Too far off. Yeah,
it was kind of close. Gabe, you had something you want to throw in, or is that what you were going to tell us?
Oh no, I wanted to add before we move on, just because you guys have mentioned how great Jennifer Hudson is, but like one thing that I'm most excited about with Respect is like how fortunate we are that she exists. Because I don't think this movie stands a chance without a talent like Jennifer Hudson, who can act the way she can and quite literally hit the notes that she can. You know, like if we were seeing someone who was being dubbed by Aretha Franklin's music or was approximating it, like she can nail it on every front, and I think that's crazy.
Have we gotten to the point where people do lip sync in
Bohemian Rhapsody?
Bohemian Rhapsody,
never mind.
And you win an Oscar for it.
Yeah, very true. Very
also, true. To Gabe's point, I think Jennifer Hudson might be the most talented, effortless singer I've ever seen. Like, I feel like when she's singing. Like, it looks like she's just, like, walking through the park.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think it's hard for her to sing like that. I just think she's naturally gifted. Like,
she
brilliant.
She almost
like,
made Cats worth watching. Not quite. Yeah. Not quite. That's a tough one. All right. One other trailer that came out. Pixar put out a longer clip of their film Soul, which is coming. Jake was very smart to point out. He's excited because it's a Pixar film that doesn't have... a number after it, meaning it's not a sequel. We're back to original territories for it. It is, I mean, even by Pixar standards, this is really heavy material. A guy who seems to be having an incredible day. He's a musician. Looks like he gets a gig at a club and then dies. And we watch his soul go to the before life, afterlife, before heaven limbo range and figure out whether or not he can get back to his body. And so I assume... And it was interesting because in the trailer, I picked up on this. They said from the studio that brought you, and instead of running through the Toy Stories, Finding Nemo's, Monsters, Inc., they said from Inside Out and Coco. So it's like, hold on to your tissues.
You about to feel some things.
Yeah, this one's going to hit you really, really hard. Because those are the two, to me, most devastating emotional.
Inside Out. Oh,
we put Coco on. Just to give Coco some love, because Inside Out is incredible.
I love Coco. The last 20 minutes of Coco destroy me.
Brendan and I, we got a screener of that. And we were putting up our Christmas tree. Because it was the end of the year awards push. And I didn't get a chance to see it during our... theatrical screening here in the market, and then I got the screener I think around the same time, so I just thought, all right, I'll catch up with that in a little bit. And we put it on, and I'm watching it, but I'm still hanging up decorations. And about 30 minutes into it, I just stopped completely and sat on the couch and was absorbed totally in the story and the presentation. And then, as you say, by the end of it, I was just bawling. I was just—it's so amazing. So if people haven't approached Coco yet, give it a shot. Soul looks like it's going to be another date. Gabe, can you look up the date? What's the new date on Soul?
What does it matter what the date is?
I'm trying to keep some consistency. I'm trying to keep a level of professionalism on this podcast, Jake. if you don't mind.
You're asking him to go outside and catch butterflies. It doesn't matter. It's insignificant what the release date is right now.
Catch me a butterfly, please, before the show is over.
I am seeing a release date of November 20th, but I don't trust anything I see anymore. Firsthand, but November 20th sounds right.
That sounds feasible. Yeah. This week in movies. So there's a movie coming out on Netflix called Desperados, and we watched the trailer for this today. I wish it was. I wish this was Antonio Banderas and Salma Hayek returning to the big screen.
I actually like Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
That's the one with Johnny Depp?
Yeah.
Is the blood?
The blood coming out of his eyes.
The blind gunfighter.
Best scene in that movie is when he eats the food and he goes back and he kills the chef because the food is so good. So he goes, "I'm gonna go back."
Is that when he takes the fake arm off?
I think
it's such a weird movie.
It's out there, man. It's definitely out there.
It's a very strange film. I didn't think we were going to discuss this week. And that tends to happen to us almost every week. We hit on a title that I was like, "I never thought I'd ever discuss that one." Desperados is not tied to the Rodriguez universe at all. It is a girl who meets her dream man. They hit it off for a long time, and then he starts to ghost her. That's one movie. Then as part of the same movie, her and her friends get really drunk and decide to text him really horrible things because they think that he is ghosting him. And then he calls her and says, "Hey, I was in a really bad accident, and I was not able to text you. My phone is back at the resort." That's the second movie that's referenced in this trailer. Then her and her friends decide.
I just watched this film earlier today. I think Lauren was watching it for an interview she has, and I was in the kitchen.
There you go.
When that secondary part of the story went down,
kicked in,
and I'm like, "What the heck is this? I had no idea." It was
the same
movie.
It sounds like Road Trip. It sounds like the movie Road Trip.
Well, so then they have to decide they have to go to Mexico to get to the resort and get his cell phone before he gets back from the hospital to see the messages, the horrible text messages. That she left for him. So,
by the way, can we mention that Road Trip, which is a really really great movie, directed by Joker's Todd Phillips? By the way,
what did he direct? Road Trip
and Old School.
Wait, I'm getting Road Trip and Euro Trip mixed up.
Road Trip doesn't he send like a sex tape to his girlfriend or something?
It's Breckenmeyer Remember Tom Green?
Tom Green with the snake.
That's right.
Snake. Yeah,
Euro Trip. Matt Damon.
Scotty doesn't know, right? And Dawn from Buffy.
Dude, how great is the Hasselhoff bit in Eurotrip? Remember the Hasselhoff bit with the dream? Come on. Even Dave's like, "Yeah, I know." Come on. The Hasselhoff bit in that movie's funny.
I remember the Hasselhoff bit. Now I have to go back and find it. All right. I'll look it up on YouTube. But more importantly, this week in movies, we are very excited because as of Friday, July 3rd, if you have Disney Plus, you're going to be able to access Hamilton. And so we're going to dive into our review of Hamilton on Disney Plus because we were
Alexander Hamilton.
So we all watched it last night. Everybody caught up with it, watched it again, watched all the way through. Kevin started watching it as soon as he got it, essentially, and was texting us like, "I'm only going to watch the first song." And then he's like, "I'm five songs into it." Kev, you go first because you were able to see it in New York with the original cast. How early in the run did you go? Was it something you just realized you needed to get up to and see? Were you and Lauren in New York anyway? How did it go down?
It was before the Tonys win. I've been going to Broadway all my life. So, my entire family's from New York. So my parents would make it a thing for us to go to Broadway shows. And in a darker turn of a story, I'll never forget when my grandfather died when I was 10, we had tickets to Phantom of the Opera that day in Manhattan, and we were staying in Long Island, and my dad wanted us to still go. I'll never forget him leaving and saying, "You guys should still go." The reason I bring that up is because I just have a visual memory of Broadway since I was a kid. So Broadway has always been special. My dad and I went to the producers in New York and saw Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick.
Wow, nice.
their first run.
That's a good one.
And that was also the same weekend that we saw Memento at Regal Ewok or whatever that was in the main street across from Empire. And then I just remember seeing
the
Memento
Ewoks
with my dad.
Across from Empire. Wait a second. I have never picked up on the fact that the Ewoks are across
Neither
from
did
Empire.
I.
That's really
second.
Funny.
it is called Regal Ewok, right?
Ewok, yes. Regal Ewok. And the other one is the AMC Empire. Yes. Okay, so these are two theaters that are literally on the same block, but across the street from each other. You can see the Regal from AMC, and it wasn't until you just said it out loud that the Ewoks are across from Empire.
Next time we're all in New York together, we have to make some kind of video. Just that's like us looking back and forth at the two theaters.
That's great.
How? We never put that together before.
Never once.
Yeah, we've only been there 500 times.
Yeah. So Broadway's been a major, major part of my life. So going to a show in New York with Lauren isn't abnormal. Mm. Hamilton was just on our radar because, you know, and some of the best shows that Lauren and I have seen together, we saw Bradley Cooper and Elephant Man. We saw Bryan Cranston in LBJ. We saw Bryan Cranston in Network. So we go up there a lot to see our favorite actors perform. But Hamilton was like really ramping up. And this is the point where all the tickets were sold out. I went on StubHub and I was able to find at this point in time, upper balcony seats for like $550 a piece. And, you know, which is very expensive, but those tickets ended up going for thousands later on.
And this is even before there was a lottery? You were just able to go to StubHub and find them?
I went to StubHub. So I know there was a lottery. I know they did the ham for ham stuff as well. I think there were different things.
But the lottery, you find out on the day of. So in theory, if Kevin's in D.C. and he finds out at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon that he won, like, short of like getting on a train and busting ass to New York.
But they do the lottery for the regional tours, though, too.
Yeah, they do. They did it here in Chicago.
I think they had a lottery in Charlotte. Okay.
Yeah, I think because that's the thing that's really important for Lynn is that that the show not be exclusive to basically people that can afford $500 tickets.
And here's the thing. At the time I bought those tickets, I couldn't afford $500 tickets because we just put it on our credit card because I think we had this weird thing in our gut that we didn't want to miss this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There was something about it like that where people were, I had never seen a Broadway show discussed like this before.
Yeah.
And so when I went to see it, we were in the balcony. I was a little nervous about the seats we got because they were so expensive and they weren't like down on the main level. But Jake was saying it was the vantage point that I had, which was cool because the stage has a spinning element on it and you could just see over top everything. It's like the best view I could have imagined because I thought about it afterwards. I'm like, I wouldn't have wanted to sit on the floor in the back. I wouldn't have gotten the scope of it. Now I do have that scope in the movie. So my experience on that show, having seen Broadway shows all my life, it was hands down the greatest thing I've ever seen on stage. I mean, there was nothing, anything I've ever seen like it. As a hip hop, I grew up listening to hip hop and metal, so hip hop was always something that was in my DNA in regards to listening to music. So to have a history lesson told through hip hop was just so creative. Mm-hmm. And then those songs are just amazing. And you listen to the soundtrack over and over and over and over again. I'll never forget going outside that night. And I got to thank Jake for this, because the whole cast came out, but Lin-Manuel Miranda was sick. And he tweeted that night, "Hey, everybody who's outside, I'm sorry, I can't come out. I'm not feeling great." So everyone signed it from the original cast, except for Lin-Manuel Miranda. And then when Jake went to interview him for the Chicago run, he got it signed for me on the playbill, which I'm really excited to have now. So the reason I bring up all that backstory is because that experience was such a special experience for me. So watching the film was very weird for me, actually, because I had never seen it like that. I'd never been that close up. And we've had a lot of discussions about this idea, and I'll steal Sam Mendes's words, this idea of epic and intimate, right? And the idea of when I watched the show for the first time, it was an epic scope, right? And Sean, you made a great point about you choose what you look at. And the stage becomes, you play with it. You write it with them. You're the collaborator. In the movie, they choose for you, as you mentioned. And I wanted to give Sean credit because that was a really interesting point. I didn't think about it. Like, they're telling you where to look at this point. Mm-hmm. I think we were texting this on the thread. It almost feels like you shouldn't be there, right? It's kind of weird, like, especially when you get super close up to like Jonathan Groff singing and spitting
on you.
Yeah, but it's so funny. I as I watched that spitting scene, he's like just really into the music. I thought to myself, they kept that in because it just shows how passionate.
Well, and also,
he was.
Well, apparently that's a thing. I asked someone that knows Broadway very well. Like, did they just happen to capture a night where he was just, I mean, that dude is a geyser. Like, he is spitting so much. But apparently that is a very known Jonathan Groff thing that, like,
no
he
kidding,
spits.
Really?
And apparently he's, like, I guess a little self-conscious about it. And I was like, well, if he is, it's captured in beautiful HD for the rest of eternity. So, but apparently,
And the spit stays there.
Like, just like, it's like hanging off of his chin. But it also, I feel like it works for King George. Like, I could see, like, King George just being so angry that the spit's just coming.
But it's so cool because, you know, for people who aren't aware how they did this, it's so interesting. They shot it with two live shows and they did like the close-ups on the days without the audience. I love those shots of like just the like the blackness of the theater, mm-hmm. right? Of just like the, because like, I mean, it just looks so epic when they go behind the stage and shoot out, or they go above the stage. The movie does.
Well, I love
take
that
on
they let the stage director direct the film,
yeah,
because smart. He has such an intimate knowledge of what to show. And yeah. there's a scene that I won't really, I don't want to single it out, but it's, you're in close on a character at the front, and then it zooms to a character in the back. And the yeah. character in the front almost goes blurry, and the character in the back comes very crisp. And I thought, like, another director might not have even thought to do that, you know, because it was such a visual right. conveyance of that. So I thought I picked up on that and thought it was cool.
But I will say this, though, like, as you watch the film, there are moments where I'm like, I would like to have been wide here. I think at mm-hmm. one point, a couple times. And Sean and I, we were all discussing this in a text thread today. I actually finished the film finally today. And so I loved the film, but I also want people, as we discussed in the thread, and you guys can get into this as well in your reviews, to still go see the show. But I will say this, like when you're, as I sat there and watched this Broadway production on my screen in HD, I had never been transported like that to a show. Mm. I sat front row for LBJ and I watched Cranston spit all over me for 3 hours, and that was awesome. But like when you have that vantage point, it was pretty awesome. But when you have that vantage point, like you're right there. That's kind of how this feels. It feels like you're front row. So you are chosen what you're looking at, and that's fine because it does serve the story, but there are a lot of things that you might miss. So I do recommend still seeing the show, as we all discussed. I think the film is just, the film is a brilliant display of one of the greatest pieces of media, cinema, writing, music ever created on this planet. Every song is perfect. Every song hits. It's so emotional. And Jake, we were talking about, I cried at the end. I mean, it really is a beautiful, beautiful film and a beautiful story that I'm actually happy that people can now experience. And this is the last thing I'll say, the MPAA thing. It didn't bother me at all, actually. So if you watch the film, we know that there are three F words allowed in a 13, or three F words in the show. They deleted two of them. They kept the one that's in Say No to This. It's the longer one where Lynn goes, yeah, like that. Yeah. And so obviously they keep it in because it's longer. It has more of an impact. But they actually played around with the editing to cover the other F-bombs in a very clever way. I don't know if you noticed it when Hercules Mulligan pops out during Yorktown. In his Tony's show, he censors himself. In this, the camera is like kind of looking up at him, and Hercules Mulligan jumps right as the F word is said.
Yeah.
You can't tell it's muted. It actually, the actual physicality of Hercules Mulligan speaks to the F word, which I thought was
kind of a cool thing. He's saying, get the F back up again. Like, right, so it makes sense that he would be like jumping up.
Right. And so that, to me, that didn't bother me. I know we've had just some discussions in the show about censorship and whether or not.
I couldn't remember what the other one was. Because I think, because the moment that that Hamilton writes an article about John Adams and says, like, you fat mother, like, that, I think that was actually bleeped in the show, right?
That's a real bleep. Yeah,
that's a real bleep. Like, that was actually bleeped in it. So it wasn't like, so if you hear that, it's not like it was censored for Disney Plus, like, where he throws the, like John Adams, you fat mother. And then, like, I think that's actually bleeped. So, but I could not remember what the third one was. Yeah.
I'll look it up.
I didn't miss it.
Exactly. It's not very apparent.
I didn't miss it
and
one
the
bit.
The show is exactly the way. So to people out there who might be worried about the show being censored, it is the exact same show. There's nothing taken out of it. The content is all there. It still has sexual elements. It still has violent elements. It still plays to all those thematics.
Yeah, it's the show.
But I didn't miss the F word. It didn't bother me at all. And I actually am glad that it's accessible to people.
Jake, I'm going to make you talk about your Emmy. Can I make you talk about your Emmy? Mm-hmm. Or do you have other things that you want to share about Hamilton? Because I mean, I'm trying to touch on the reasons why it's important to everybody. And for Kevin getting to see the original cast, like you got this amazing opportunity to do this when you came to Chicago.
Even before it started going on tour, Chicago was the first city that Hamilton came to after New York. Not for a tour, but for an actual residency. Like, it was here. It just recently left. It was here for 3 years.
It's supposed to be in D.C. right now at the Kennedy Center.
For a residency, right? Not for a tour. Yeah. Not for, like, for a full-blown residency. And so it was a big deal at the time that, like, holy crap. Like, Because it's at first it was a very exclusive club. Like it, like if you got to see Hamilton, one, it meant that you were able to travel to New York and that you were able to afford the tickets. This was the first step toward accessibility. Granted, it was just another residency, but it was moving in the direction of, okay, if they're doing this, that means they must start, they must be preparing for a tour. Well, because they were doing this, Lin-Manuel Miranda made himself available to a handful of reporters here in Chicago for an extensive talk. And so I got him for basically 15 minutes when really, like, you know, I was able to kind of, through that 15 minutes, kind of tell the story, like, get the story of Hamilton with him. I mean, like, it kind of came from, and this is such a, I'd argue, an important thing to remember. The idea for Hamilton came from a time when he was on vacation and he was able to relax. Like, he was on a vacation from In the Heights. He bought Roern Chernow's biography of Alexander Hamilton, started reading it on vacation, and then thought, like, oh, this dude kind of reminds me, like, of a rapper. Like, he had beefs with all the other founding fathers. He used the spoken word to go after them. He was shot in a duel. And so he said, this sort of reminds me of different aspects of different rappers. And so the interview went really well, and I won a couple of awards for it. But my opening night experience, I was fortunate enough to be invited to opening night. Everybody was there. So directly in front of me, because I was on the orchestra level in, like, row J, which is a good seat normally, but to your point, Kevin, I ended up seeing it again from up above and got to see the stage. I didn't realize the stage really to the degree that it moved. It's gorgeous. Lin-Manuel Miranda right in front of me, Alex Lacamoire like to my left, Luis Miranda, Lin's father, was there. I mean, and so, you know, the mayor of Chicago, you know, Rahm Emanuel at the time. Like, it was, so it was interesting to, like, kind of like watch Miguel Cervantes, who I would argue is just as good of an Alexander Hamilton, if not better than Lin.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask. Like, could you imagine trying to play Hamilton in front of Lin?
No. And so it was so, like, you know, I would, like, watch a show and then, like, look at Lin and, like, watch a show and, like, exactly, you know, like, Kevin, that story you tell about Spielberg, how, like, you're glad that you weren't in the theater with him because you would have been watching. I found myself doing that. Like, ooh, that was a good performance. I wonder what Lin thought. You know? and I got to speak to him briefly in the lobby, and, you know, he's always been, you know, I think we've all spoken to him. He's always been incredibly kind to all of us. I have an affinity. It is my favorite Broadway show of all time. I have several of the songs memorized. I could recite the entire, you know, Alexander Hamilton rap or whatever the case may be. It's a show that has meant a lot for me. One, just because I genuinely love it, but also professionally, it's been a story that I feel like I've been following, not from the beginning because I didn't really get to cover it as much when it was in New York, but, like, from the moment it was accessible to me, I feel like I've been there. And so I feel sort of a personal connection. But it was the first time last night that I got to see it with the original cast. So in that sense, I got to see the show. Like, I'd seen it before, but last night did feel a little bit like the first time.
And different? Better?
Yeah, I'd say. I mean, here's the deal. It's a great companion piece to the experience of having been there.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you have the opportunity and if you have the means, I would still say go to see it in a theater because it's like watching a sporting event on TV versus being, you know, in the stadium with the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both of them have their appeals, but one can't replicate the other.
Yeah.
The thing I would argue, because and then Sean, I really want to hear your opinion, having never actually seen the show.
Mm.
I would argue if you're going to watch Hamilton on Disney Plus for the first time, do your absolute best to replicate the theatrical experience. And what I mean by that is in a theater, and if they even leave the thing in the Disney Plus movie, King George telling you to turn off your phone.
Yeah.
Turn off your phone for 3 hours. Turn off all the rules, short of wearing a suit, all the rules you would abide by in the Richard Rogers Theater or the CIBC Theater or, you know, or whatever they are, the Kennedy Center, whatever the case may be, abide by those rules in your living room. Because if you, like, I mean, we're the verbiage, I think there are over 22,000 words in Hamilton. The verbiage is a work of art. It is masterful. It is a literary version of the Sistine Chapel. And if you are occasionally glancing down at your phone or sending a text, in the 30 seconds it takes you to send that text, you could be missing one of the most beautifully written lyrics of all time. So I cannot stress enough where if this is your first experience, respect the art of this thing and give it the 2 hours and 45 minutes it deserves. And if you got to pause it, but don't be doing other things when you watch it, especially for the first time, because you're going to be missing out.
Sean, before you go, do you mind if I add one more quick thing?
Of course.
The only thing I wanted to add, because I agree with Jake, was because I think we were all discussing it from our perspectives and how things were. One of the things I really wanted to add was the first time I saw the show with the original cast, the person that stuck out the most to me was David Diggs, because I just thought that his performance was so brilliant. And I just think Lafayette is like my favorite character in the show just because he's so fun. And all the battle raps that that Thomas Jefferson and Hamilton have.
Is that's it why, weird that he comes back and plays a different character? Because that really threw me off. They all do.
A lot of them do.
Yeah. A lot of them do.
The third Skylar sister.
Anthony Ramos does come back a lot.
Yeah, and the third Skylar sister is the woman that he has the affair with.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
But last thing I want to mention is, so the show, the actual Broadway show, David Diggs was the standout for me. The movie was Eliza. The character of Eliza.
Yeah.
Is her name Philippa Sue?
Philippa Sue, yeah. Sue. And one of the few cast members that did not win a Tony.
And I gotta tell you right now, Helpless is the song that really kind of ignited for me on the movie version. Mm-hmm. In the, you know, when you saw the Broadway show, it was still kind of, it wasn't new, but it was still out there. It wasn't like super, like everyone didn't know the lyrics yet. I think some people were there. Actually, I remember sitting next to someone who saw the show three times already. I remember that.
Jesus.
It was big at that point. But anyway, so I just wanted to give a shout out to Eliza, that character.
So I avoided Hamilton for the most part. When it was coming around, when it was huge. Not that I didn't physically avoid it. It just didn't register with me. And I knew it was a super big deal. I'm not a huge Broadway guy. I'm not. And even the best things on Broadway, whenever people say like, this is the best show or the best musical, I watch it and I'm always like, yeah, it's just a Broadway show. Like it's Broadway to me has a certain level of entertainment that it never really registers with me. I'm way more of a bands, you know, rock music, punk music, stuff like that. I just register with four people on a stage playing instruments than the showiness that comes with Broadway. And when you add it in hip hop, I just don't love hip hop. You know, like Kevin grew up with it. I didn't. And I respect and appreciate some rap, but I don't really choose to listen to it. It's like with Jake with country. Jake loves country, but some people just can't listen to it. Right. I just would never choose to do hip hop. So when you combine the two of them together, as much as everyone told me how great Hamilton was, I was like, yeah, I'm sure it's fine. You know, I'm sure it's probably really good, you know, but I just never went out of my way to check it out. And you'd hear songs and even the songs that I heard, like you always heard Alexander Hamilton primarily. You heard My Shot a lot. You heard The Room Where It Happens. And I thought those songs were good, but And out of context, I was like, yeah, I get what he's trying to do. You know, yeah, he's doing spoken word hip hop history. Cool. Sounds pretty good. But at the ticket prices that they were going for, or the lottery system and all this jazz. And even when they came through Charlotte on the touring production, I was like, that's OK. We have other things going on. And I never went to go do it. And so the first time that I actually heard Lin-Manuel Miranda was Moana, oddly enough. And they talked about how he wrote the songs for that musical. And I'll never forget, like, the night that we were going to that screening, it was November and things were just chaotic and hectic from the holidays. And I was going to skip it. I was like, I don't really want to go to the screening tonight. And Brendan said, oh, I kind of want to see Moana. And I said, all right, if you want to go, we'll go. And the two of us went and it was amazing. Like, Moana, I think, is fantastic. And one of the things that makes it fantastic is the music. And I was like, oh, damn, like these are great songs. And this guy is really talented. So I kind of recognized his level of talent. But watching the movie last night, and I have this level of cynicism that coats almost everything where, you know, I'm like, yeah, I'm sure it's fine. You know, I'm sure it's really good, but it's not going to be anywhere as good as people make it out to be. And I'll start to pick it apart sort of thing. But we were like three songs in. Michelle and I were watching it together. And we were like, holy fuck, like this is unbelievably good. It's not pretty good. It's not great. It's unbelievably good.
It's hair on your arm stand up good. Yeah. Like hair on my arm stood up again, and I've seen the show. That's how good it is.
And how few things can you honestly say that about, you know, where it's just where it blows past expectations that are so sky high. And then we're like five or six songs into it. And I decide I'm going to open my phone because I just want to have the playlist in front of me and sort of track it. And I swear to you, I opened it and I saw 46 songs. And my gut reaction was, oh, hell no, I'm not doing 46 songs. But everyone is good. there's not a bad song in the damn show. It's crazy. It's crazy how good it is. And again, I'm not breaking any news here. Hey, Hamilton is amazing.
Hamilton is good.
Yeah, Hamilton is good. But it's set up to fail for people who haven't seen it. You know, like you just cross your arms and you'd be like, there's no, it's that good. And what it reminded me of in a weird sort of way is we today have access to everything. If you say like, oh, I would love to see what Led Zeppelin sounded like playing a concert in 1974. Boop, 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 boop. There it is. I can watch it on YouTube. But with Hamilton, you couldn't access it. You couldn't get to it. You know, like it's the tickets were really hard or they were super expensive and you couldn't justify spending thousands of dollars on tickets to go see it. Or if a, and so Michelle and I had this conversation a lot today. She's an elementary school teacher. She works in elementary school. She has hundreds of kids who don't have access to it, who will not have access to it. And that's just in her school. So then if you go school by school by school by school and you think about all of the kids who, and this is what I talk about us having access to stuff. I don't remember what it felt like to really want to see something and not be able to, or to really, yeah. really want to get to pick up. Like, remember how excited you used to be to get yeah. a book or a record or something that you had heard so much about, you know, but you couldn't get it. And that's what Hamilton has been for all these years. And so watching it last night, a couple of songs into it, it washed over me of like, oh, this is what it feels like again, to be not denied something, but have to actually wait. And I think there's so much value
in
that.
Wait for it.
Yeah. So I think, honestly, the existence of this movie alone justifies the existence of Disney Plus. Like 100%. If you were paying into Disney Plus and you were kind of saying, what am I? And Jake, you've been one of these people. Why am I paying into this? The Mandalorian was one of those things. It was cool. It was good to have that as a series. But and they should never take Hamilton off of this service. It should be waiting there for people who want to watch it over and yeah. over and over again. Because this morning I woke up and I was working on my computer and I turned it on. And the King George joke was funny to me the second time through because I didn't even know it was King George when he made the announcement at the beginning of the show, because I didn't know who King George was and I didn't know why he would be important to the show. And then when I turned it on this morning and it was Jonathan Groff, and I thought, oh, that's really funny. Yeah, of course he'd be making the announcement about cell phones. So it's going to be continuously rewarding. And you talk about the lyrics. The lyrics are one of those things where I thought, like, okay, no matter how much I'm loving this, it's going to get repetitive, and I don't want to hear a historical breakdown of every single thing that we get to. And when I saw the 46 songs, I thought, there's no way this is going to last. They are so clever, and they are so musically different and engaging and inspiring that I can't wait to go back and start picking apart the soundtrack. It's brilliant on every level. I solidify everything you guys said. It doesn't, to me, meet the seeing in a live theater. I just couldn't, I didn't get, even with the crowd noise pumped in, I didn't get the sensation of this is great. I'm seeing in a theater. I will regret not ever getting to see it with the original cast in a intimate live setting, but this is the next best thing. And I'm literally talking like 9.8 versus what I assume a 10 would be. So God bless Disney Plus. Honestly, God bless Disney Plus for spending a ton of money and then not holding it till December 2022, when, dude, someone said this today on Twitter, I don't disagree, this would have had a huge box office opening.
Massive.
I think
100 million?
Maybe. I mean,
I think it could have got 100 million.
I mean, it depends when it opened and like what it was up against. And
you know, I feel like people, and granted, we're all and still in quarantine and people get excited for any kind of threat, but like, in the grand scope of us this time in which we've been in this pandemic, I feel like people have been more excited for Hamilton than anything else that I've seen. Everyone involved here in some form or fashion was able to talk with the cast over the past few weeks. My bosses have been more excited. I mean, like, think about all the interviews collectively we all have gotten over the past few months. My bosses were more excited about Hamilton than anything that I'm good in their eyes for like a month. Yeah. I am sold. I can phone it in
a
for
month.
Like the
rest.
For the
give yourself a few. Give yourself a few.
We're on every single day.
It's truly great. It exceeds expectations, and the Disney Plus movie is made by people who love the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the birth child of everyone who's been involved in making the show special. And so I think whether you're a new fan or a diehard fan, I think the I think that it was works for everybody.
It was made with good intentions. Like, it wasn't made back in 2016. This wasn't made to like put in theaters one day. This wasn't filmed to put on a streaming service. This was filmed because they thought like, we're never going to have this again. Like, like they basically filmed it without knowing. Oh, I'm getting chills. They filmed it without knowing what they were going to do with it, but they recognized the significance and the importance of needing to preserve what I think is genuinely history, and said like, we'll figure out what to do with it later, but we got to do this.
It's not unlike how we decided to go to YouTube so that we would have visual representation of this show, you know, because eventually, I don't know.
I'm definitely the King George of the group.
The blend game this week is a dedication to a filmmaker that we have all loved and appreciated for many, many years, who we lost recently. But we did not touch on it last week, and we decided we were going to save our tribute to Joel Schumacher for this week's blend game, because we all grew up on Joel Schumacher's films. His body of work is, when we talk about pigeonholing, like, it's impossible to pigeonhole Joel Schumacher into. Like, he's done gaudy superhero films. He's done vampire movies. He's done incredible crime thrillers. He, you know,
Phantom of the Opera.
He was at the forefront of some of the Grisham adaptations. Just an incredibly gifted filmmaker. And we're going to celebrate his work by picking out our favorite films of his. I'll go first. I wanted to try to find something that wasn't The Lost Boys, and it has to be The Lost Boys. The Lost Boys is just such a great, great horror comedy, which is a hard genre to nail down. There aren't a ton of examples that you can point to. And I'll tell you this because I look for examples of that, especially to show the boys, because I don't necessarily want to. PJ can handle it. Bren's at that age where he's curious and wants to watch horror films, but he can't really dive into a full-blown horror yet, because I think I'd psychologically mess him up. So I try to find that bridge with horror comedies, and he hasn't seen Lost Boys yet. I showed PJ Lost Boys a while ago. It also totally captures that 80s vibe. It's got two Coreys, not one Corey, but both Coreys, which is fantastic. Has a killer soundtrack. Kiefer Sutherland's amazing.
Kiefer Sutherland.
So great. So young and pristine and beautiful. It's exactly what you want out of the undead. Like, they should be California surfer bad boy vampires, right? Like, it's just, and it's got that weird Joel Schumacher visual bohemian approach that he brings, or brought, especially early on. The grandfather just being a weirdo, and all of it across the board is great. And I love, somebody tweeted this too, and I'm going to steal it, but I believe it. It doesn't forget the vampire rules. All the stupid rules that come with a specific genre, they're important. You know, they're there for a reason. And when you can honor them, but not make them feel dated, like, everyone knows you're not supposed to invite a vampire in, right? But like, the way that the head of the main vampires, and I think his name is Max, I believe his name is Max, where he doesn't let Diane Wiest invite him in, and he makes it seem like it's out of respect for her because they're on a date. And he's like, oh, no, I'm not going to. She goes, no, come on in. And doom, boom, that's it. And it just takes that kind of thing. But I also love the confrontation with them at the end, with the vampires at the end, goes through each of, like, they have garlic, they have holy water, they tick them all off, and they do them in a cool way, like a cool badass way. And that scene terrified me when they go into the cave, when the Frog Brothers bring Corey Haim into the cave and they decide they're going to stake Kiefer Sutherland, but they stake one of the friends, one of the younger ones, and they're all sleeping upside down and they wake up and chase them out of the cave. It was horrifying as a kid. I loved that. I loved that scene. And I will always be thankful for Joe Schumacher for bringing us Lost Boys. So.
It's also a great 80s time capsule.
Oh,
yeah.
It's terrific. When I say it's so great 80s, movie. I don't mean that as an insult. I mean as a compliment. Like, it perfectly without being, you know, it just perfectly
cheesy.
It just captures what the 80s kind of looked like.
Yeah. And of course, Greasy Saxophone Man, who is a legend of all cinematic legends. I salute you. So, Kevin, you picked.
Mine is just, you know, again, this whole game is personal, right? So the one I went with is just based on kind of when I saw it. I took a film class in college, and I remember the teacher assigned certain films for us to watch, and Do the Right Thing was on there. Citizen Kane was on there. It's funny. Do you guys remember a movie called Chungking Express?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was the cover of the book for the text for the class. I'll just never forget it. That was like the main point of the book. So the one of the films that I saw there for the first time was Falling Down, which, you know, that film was such a special film because I had never really seen somebody fully realize that concept of like breaking. And like, you know, someone maybe who's like, we've seen it in movies before, but it was the first time it really registered with me to see somebody like break about everyday things that people get really stressed about, like little sitting in things, traffic.
The little thing is it just kept pushing the buttons.
Right. And isn't he in traffic at one point? He
just wanted breakfast at McDonald's.
Yes. Is it Burger King? Right. I remember
that was
like,
McDonald's.
All right. So there's a scene though, I think, where he's like in traffic and doesn't he ask the guy who's working on the road, what are you really doing here? And the guy says, oh, we're just using our taxpayer money and we're not really doing anything to the road. And he gets like really upset about it.
Sounds familiar. It's one of those movies I need to revisit because I'm sure it would carry so much more weight even today.
Yeah. And Robert Duvall is absolutely incredible in it. Michael Douglas, obviously. There's a great moment with Duvall and Douglas at the end that I think is super powerful. That film was interesting, and Jake brings up the McDonald's. I just thought it was a Burger King. I don't know why, but he walks in there to order breakfast, and it's like 4 minutes before the time breakfast stopped. And I think we've all been there, where you walk into like a fast food place and you want breakfast or whatever, and it's like, oh, it's like 2 minutes away. Like, oh, we're serving lunch now. The menu's flipped over.
Adam Sandler can do that in Big Daddy, and it could be played huge. You know,
right,
for laughs, or you could do Michael Douglas and it breaks his soul.
Right. And but Falling Down, it's an interesting movie because it does you are him, right? You're like, you start questioning your own morals and your own breaking points. And I had never seen a film really kind of like take me down a path that kind of put me in the villain's seat and kind of made me again, it's something we've seen in cinema before, but this is the film that registered for me with that. It was tapping into things that were real to a lot of people that everybody does on a daily. It's like it was like Seinfeld, but with a drama. Like, you know, they tapped into real things that like people like to talk about, or those little details in your life that kind of stick out that everybody can somehow relate to. And I just think Douglas plays that film brilliantly. And it's a movie that really. While it is an entertainment piece, it does make you think about, and every time I see a breakfast sign at a McDonald's or a Burger King, whatever, I think of Falling Down. Every time I'm stuck in traffic and I see workers working on a highway, I think of Falling Down. Hey. And I feel like Falling Down just kind of imprinted on me in such a weird way that I just, you know, there's something really interesting about relatability in a film when you're watching a character who's doing bad things and you kind of like think about your own self. And I feel like that becomes an interesting collaboration process with the audience and how you can kind of, you could be a part of it with them and kind of test your own limits and kind of how far you would go. And I've always found that to be a pretty interesting story. And again, if we've seen it before in cinema, it was just the one that really kind of registered for me. So Falling Down, I feel like out of his entire filmography, will be my favorite.
Great choice. Jakey?
I also chose Falling Down.
Oh, look at you too.
Yeah.
You
really?
Yeah. I also chose Falling Down. You know what's interesting?
Sorry.
You know, no. Like tying back to Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda has spoken a lot about how there isn't a word in Hamilton that's changed over the last 5 years, but just with everything that's going on with the world and how the times are changing and what's in the headlines, the show means something different to different people.
Mm-hmm.
People are using lyrics in protests. It's affecting them in different ways, different parts of the songs. And I feel like Falling Down is changing in a lot of different ways. You know, to Kevin's point, you know, I used to watch Falling Down and think like, you know, I've had those, you know, where you're stuck in traffic, and we've all had days where, you know, we snap at someone that we love because of outside factors, things that are bothering us. And, you know, your parents or your significant other says, or your kid says something to you and you're just like, hey, look, I can't, you know, it's not how you would normally act, but it's just, you know, and you take that and you turn it up to 11 and then you go like, God, like, what if? But then just when you see some of the horrific atrocities that are happening in the world today, it really makes you like, you know, like what kept Michael Douglas from, you know, being one of the guys that turns into one of those tragic headlines that we turn into. You know, it's just a really interesting, almost Joker like what was step A? Like so often in the story we hear, you know, step Z. But, you know, it's falling down was such an interesting look at who this guy was and how he gets to that point. And I just think it's definitely changed a lot with the times. And, you know, just I think continuously will.
I want to point out one thing about Falling Down. It's written by a guy named Ebro Smith, who's an actor also. It's really the only credit that he has, the only writing credit that he has. And it got me thinking about something that I was thinking about this past weekend. Honestly, this was in the back of my mind, and I forget how I even got to this point, but I was just sitting, I was doing something else and just thinking. I don't understand why we assume that people who are able to direct or write one really good film have the ability to keep doing it. Like, you would think that someone has a great idea for a movie, a really strong idea for a movie, and they put everything that they have into it. And then we as an audience immediately want that person to 2 years later have their next movie.
What else you got?
How is that? That's so unfair to directors and to screenwriters. Like, what if that's their one great story? And we almost expect these people to have 10 or 15 great stories in them. And if they don't, we're mad at them. You know, like, what if Nolan gave you Interstellar and that was it? And he was like, I had a great idea for a movie called Interstellar.
what more do you want from me?
Right. And that's all he gave you. Or if Spielberg gave you E.T. and then you were like, cool, what else are you going to do? And he's like, nothing. I had E.T.
What do you mean? What else am I going to do?
It's all I have.
To be fair, that's kind of the news business. And Kevin knows this. You know, you can bust your ass for weeks putting, you know, like getting sources, pulling together a shoot, going out there, spending a day or two shooting the story, you know, all this time editing it, and then it airs at 7:50 on a Tuesday morning, and at 7:55 your boss will text you, dude, that was great. What do you got tomorrow?
Yeah,
like that's kind of our life on a daily basis. I mean, like, obviously in a much micro version. But that's, trust me, I get that.
That is not healthy in the least bit. So we should all be Ebro Smith, who delivered Falling Down and then was like, that's what I had. There you go. That was my story. And Joel Schumacher directed the hell out of it. Let's get to audience picks for Joel Schumacher Blend. We had Andy Travers and a few other people picked Phone Booth. Okay, so when we're talking about the versatility of Joel Schumacher, this is the guy who put nipples on Batman, obviously. He's the guy who directed the 80s teen vampire film. He's the guy who directed Phone Booth, which is an isolated thriller in one location and works extremely well. He's the guy who directed Falling Down with a riveting Michael Douglas performance. Reed Bennett chose Phantom of the Opera. He's the guy who directed Phantom of the Opera too. His filmography is incredible in terms of his versatility. And then Mike Reyes, Marcus Brown, Paul Marsh, and many, many others went with The Lost Boys. So, for next week, you guys can reach out on Gabe, I just looked.
What?
You can reach out on Twitter using the hashtag Viola Davis Blend. Hashtag Viola Davis Blend. We will be celebrating the incredible filmography.
Wow.
Of the absolutely amazing Viola Davis.
That's going to take me a second.
Yeah. So play along on social media, or you can email us at realblend@cinemablend.com. And you can also email us a review if you would like to, because that's what JD the Reckless did last week. And they said best cinema podcast ever. And ever was spelled EVEEEERRRRR. And then a bunch of exclamation points. Discovered this podcast looking for Tarantino guest podcast episodes and stumbled upon them. Amazing two-part, which gave me a better look into the mind of my favorite director. Then I decided to keep listening to this podcast, and it has really helped me get through work. So thank you guys with all exclamation points. Well, JD the Reckless, thank you.
No, thank you,
JD, for writing us that review. We will be back next week with an all new. Oh, we've got some really cool things coming up. Can I talk about the things that we're doing? Gabe, can you talk about the things that we're doing?
I'll talk about the things that we're doing. We have,
if it happens,
as people might know, we haven't had a commentary track in a while. True. Given the state of the world, we had some delays. We have a very exciting surprise commentary track that I will just tease. If it happens, we'll have a special guest involved.
Yes.
Which is going to be awesome. And then we have, we have a couple more really great interviews.
See, so, you don't say them out loud. You almost don't want to say them out loud.
You can't say them out loud. Can't say them out loud. Yeah. Not yet.
But they're really cool. Yes,
some really
one of
cool,
them
really
in
cool.
particular is going to be an hour-long conversation, if it happens,
if it
with
happens.
Someone
if it happens.
That is has been popped up into the movie news recently again.
Yeah, yes.
I know who it is.
For good reasons.
Yes, Jake knows who it is. And if you want to know who it is, follow us at Real Blend on Twitter.
Or just text me and I'll tell you.
The boys at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, and at Sean_O'Connell. We'll be back next week with an all new episode and hopefully some bonus content next week, providing everything goes well with all of our schedules. So until then,
Dunkirk.
Who the fuck was that?
Kirk. What happened?
I just wanted to stretch it out.
Like your internet
longer.
Go out?
No, it's always so fast.
Your
it's like
internet go out.
It's just over after I say Dunkirk. I'm like, I just wanted to like see your faces a little bit longer, so I just kept saying.
Well, all of our faces are like.
That's sweet. That was sweet. He redeemed it.
That's
I like that.
That's also how Nolan pitched the title to the studio.
this podcast just... is not reflective of Nolan because we're all sitting down
in chairs.
Chairs!
Damn you, chairs!
Damn you, chairs!
He's got a point.
If you're he's sitting, you're not working.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.